Please be aware that this conversation gets into topics related to mental health, suicidal ideation, and substance abuse. Caution is advised.
There's something wrong with me. I had mental health issues. I had trauma. I would drink while I was working. I was using or like relying on substances more and more and more to just get by. I just numb all the pain, cocaine numbing, alcohol numbing, so as to block off from my feelings, but you can't heal unless you remove those blockers. Our sobriety is shining a light on people who have issues with alcohol.
Hello, and welcome to the Sober Butterfly Podcast, a sober lifestyle resource around sober travel, sober fun, and real talk, okay? We want to get into the nitty-gritty about what it's like to live a sober lifestyle, especially if you come from a place where you struggled with substances. Like my next guest, Yaz. There is no single narrative when it comes to addiction, but it is so fascinating sometimes, like how the parallels correspond. And I find that in listening to Yasmin's story, I heard so many elements of my own. And I think you're also going to feel the same. Like, it's so relatable in so many different ways. We get into everything from what it's like to harbor childhood trauma and how that can drive addiction, what it's like to be a high functioning, you know, alcoholic or someone who is able to really show up and be successful in the public eye or on paper, but the reality is so far from that behind the scenes, right? Like, when you are alone, what are you dealing with? What are you struggling with? How are you coping? And using substances often can be a placeholder for really getting the help that you need. We both related to this idea of therapy coming up as an integral piece of our recovery. We even talk about labeling in this week's episode. Like, you know, last week I talked about Cara Delevingne using healing instead of recovery. So we bring that up and look at the juxtaposition between those two terms. We talk about representation in sobriety and how it's really important to be able to see yourself sometimes when you're looking to get help. I say all that to preface how amazing this week's episode is. So let's jump in right now. Love to hear, Yaz, a little bit more about, you know, your story, what led you to sobriety, and how it all started for you.
Sure. So I'm coming up to 7 years sober now. I had a lot of like a disrupted kind of growing up childhood process. Like, we moved around a lot. I had family members with mental health issues. I had mental health issues. I had trauma, and I didn't really address any of that because, you know, you just didn't, like, the family didn't talk about it, no one talked about it, you just press on. So I had a really lovely career in publishing, which I love publishing. I love literature. I'm like a literature geek. So I had a career in publishing. I had a really nice place to live. You know, I had like a lot of friends that were like working as well. So we had a lot of disposable income, and it's kind of like, what were we doing every weekend? We were doing loads of coke. We were drinking. You know, it just turned into like a constant thing. And I was using or like relying on substances more and more and more to just get by. Like, you know, even though everything looked fine, I was functioning, you know, I was doing really well in my job. Like, I had nothing inside. Like, I would come home from work. I would bring my computer home. I would drink while I was working. I'd like be working overtime for what? For no reason, because I didn't have anything else in my life. I was so depressed, so miserable. It just got to the stage where I was like, why? I was contemplating suicide. That's when I was like, it's not, things are not right. Yeah, like, there's got to be more, especially in this world, in this age, there's, you know. So I got in touch with a therapist, and she is really amazing. I haven't actually left therapy. We've been together for like almost 7 years, you know, we've tailed off, but kind of like what we were saying before we got onto this recording, Nadine, like, she was so kind and so gentle, and also didn't put any labels. And she like she didn't even address the alcohol as a central issue. She was like, there's other things going on here. Yeah. The alcohol is a sticking plaster, but there's other things. And so that's how it started. And I really haven't looked back. Like, honestly, quitting has given me so much, you know.
Trauma, I think so much of it is generational. I think that you touched on something that really resonated with me, which is like these things would come up, and I'm assuming you're referring to childhood and, you know, in your home, and you don't really talk about it, especially back then. And I don't know how old you are. I'm 30, about to be 32.
And I'm 35. I just okay, 35. So
we're both millennials. We're still in the same in that same era, right? I don't even think a lot of people know this. Like, my family's British. Like, I was born in England. So I don't know if that's an added identity point. I'm sure there's that part too. I come from a Caribbean background.
Yeah.
And crazy. So it's crazy, right? Like, my family's Jamaican.
I was nine.
Of course, of course. This is weird. Like, we're really just now discovering this. But yeah, I think it's just like, so, okay, we can be even more niche, right? Like, maybe if we look through the lens of like, okay, Caribbean background, you know, you're in a really like progressive, fast paced city, and, you know, things happen in childhood that aren't necessarily addressed. I think for me, there was this strong sense of resilience. Like, I saw my mom work so hard, like, hardest working person I've ever met in my life. But she, I know for a fact, had a lot of trauma that she didn't quite deal with. So I don't think it was necessarily like an unwillingness to want to help me in certain ways and deal with my own childhood issues and things that I was afflicted with and going through. I think it was an inability to be able to make that connection. Growing up, having things happen, not necessarily dealing with it, and that connects to later on the therapy piece, which also I mainly got sober because of my therapist bringing up points that I already knew, really, quite frankly. I already knew these things were issues in my life, but coming from a kind place, coming from a place of inquiry, coming from a place of not labeling, as you mentioned, really made me more receptive. It let my guard down. What was that point, I should say, where you recognized, I cannot continue to go on like this? Because you mentioned this idea of, you know, suicidal ideation, which is not to be taken lightly. Did you divulge that to your therapist, or was this just sort of like inner thoughts that you weren't sharing with anyone?
So I think when I first went to the therapist, I think like the first thing I said was just like, there's something wrong with me. Like, you know, I didn't have the words, I didn't have the vocabulary. And I was like, there's something wrong with me, and I don't know how to fix it. And actually, my therapist, I honestly, like, I just think God just sent her to me. I really do, because my therapist, she says straight away, like, have you had childhood trauma? Like, that was her second. And I was like, whoa, what? And I didn't say anything. That wasn't even what I went to her for. And then I said yes. And then just very slowly, like over the next few months, like we started to work on that. And part of working on that was looking at the blockers. What's blocking you from really healing? Alcohol, like big flashing red lights. Like, my lifestyle was that I was numbing. I just numb all the pain. Cocaine numbing, alcohol numbing. So as to block off from my feelings, but you can't heal unless you remove those blockers. And that was really the first step. And it was also the first time, like you said, that someone had been like, I care, and I want you to heal yourself, and I want you to be happy. And no shade to our mums, right? They were so busy. Like you said, like, my mother's had her own trauma. She lost her mum at 16. She was on her own from 16. She had me very young. She had my brother. She had to work. She had to fight for everything to give us. She didn't actually have time to be like, how are you? Do you know what I mean? She's like,
right,
putting food on the table, paying all the bills, trying to look after herself, trying to look after us. Like, it was hard.
Yes, absolutely. Okay, something is broken. I've had those exact words literally come to mind. I feel like there was a void, like there was just this big pit of emptiness. And I was just like, not quite in the stage of like suicidal ideation, but I was just like, well, what's the point? If this is the track and the trajectory of my life, I don't know if it's worth it. And so I guess in that realm, that is, you know, this idea of like feeling hopeless or feeling lost, what were people saying around you? Because you mentioned that this was the first time that you felt like somebody truly cared. What were your interpersonal relationships like at this time? Did people suspect or think that something was off with you? Did they think that Yaz needs help? Or were you masking? Were you able to project an image otherwise?
I think the crowd that I was with, and we talked a bit about the crowd being enablers, they might have said, oh yeah, you know, you drink a bit too much. But generally it was like, if we want to go out and have a good time and have a good party, we're going to call Yaz, you know, we're going to invite her, like, oh my God, you're so fun. You're such a party girl. Like, ah, ha, ha. And then like laughing, like, you know, I put myself in some really like dangerous situations, but when you're with a crowd of enablers, they all think that's hilarious and fun and you're just living life and like YOLO. And it's like, it's not YOLO, guys. We all need help.
Wow. You actually said it the best way I've heard it, because enabling is a perfect word that comes to mind, because I think a big part of it is like, you're our best source of entertainment. I'm right alongside with you. Like, you know, I think that I just have more of an extreme personality that I'm going to push the envelope. And that's why it was so fun and crazy, because you didn't know what to expect with me. Like, I would just be a loose cannon ready to implode some days, or, you know, destroy the bathroom other days, or be like the funnest, most like hilarious person at the party. It just depended on my mood. Depending on what's going on in your life, I think the alcohol exasperates the, at least for me, it exasperated how I was feeling inside.
Yeah.
So when you got help with your therapist, what were the emotions that she had you go through? What were her recommendations to you? And how was that process of actually no longer using, you know, cocaine or drinking? Was it difficult, or were you able to quit cold turkey?
So I think the cocaine use was way easier, because I had a boyfriend who was really heavily addicted to cocaine, and it was a very unhealthy, toxic relationship. And kind of the end of that coincided with the start of therapy. So it was really easy for me to drop the cocaine, because I didn't want to be near that. I really didn't. It made me feel so unsafe. And I recognized that. The alcohol, that was a bit harder. One thing she said to me, and that really helped, that was like the final nail in the coffin, because I thought I could moderate first. Like, we all think we can moderate. We can't
moderate. We all think we can moderate. It was an experiment for me. I failed miserably. It's easy.
You can't moderate.
It's harder moderating to me than just being sober. Like, it's harder to be like, in my alcoholic brain, to be like, I'm going to have two drinks tonight. I'm just like counting every sip. Waiting, going through the motions. Anyway, back to you. So no, but you tried to moderate. Like, not possible.
But Nadine, I just want to say, like, what you said, that's so true. And I think people need to really, like, realize that and hear from us, right? Moderation, if you are coming from a place of addiction, it's so much harder than just stopping. When you're stopping, you're like, no. When you are moderating, you will almost always go back over the limit. Always.
Always. I think you can get rid of the almost. If you are someone who suffers from addiction, yes. And like to that point, because you have 7 years plus of sobriety, do you ever hear it? Because this question comes up to me, and I'm just approaching 2 years now. And I feel like people are like, yay, you've done it. Like, can't you, you've proven to yourself that you don't need to drink. Can't you just have one? And I'm like, no. You don't get it. Like, that's the whole point. Yeah. I can't just have one. That's why I have none. Do people ever ask you the same thing? They're like, well, yeah, you're really not going to drink because you've been sober for so long and blah, 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 blah.
Yeah. I think one thing that therapy's taught me is like being really strong with my boundaries. And like, if people always ask me, why don't you drink? Or I tell them I'm an alcoholic, and then I just leave it at that, because those times they just shut up. Don't say anything else. And if someone is trying to erode your boundaries, that's on them. Yeah, I would never, to anyone that was recovering, you know, if you give up smoking, I'm not going to go to a smoker and go, oh, really? Okay, you don't want to try one? Why am I going to do that? Right?
That's a great analogy. You've been sober for 7 years now, and you have perspective. I'm assuming you don't romanticize or think about drinking anymore or using. You have made peace with your decision, right?
Sometimes on like really bad days, I think, what if? Like, I just think about what if. But the thing that comes into my mind is what my therapist said to me, like right at the start. She said, you going back to alcohol is like a dog eating its vomit. And I know that's so horrible. Like, it's such a disgusting analogy. And I'm sorry, everyone. But it really stuck in my mind. Like, the whole process is toxic. It does nothing. You gain nothing. And that just, you know, sometimes if I'm having a really dark day, and it doesn't happen very often, but I just remember and I'm like, it doesn't help. It doesn't help. So what's the point? I don't want to live a life where I'm hurting myself and I'm not moving myself forwards.
I love that. I've never heard like the okay, it's like a dog eating its own vomit. And I think that's actually perfect, because if you think about it, if anyone's seen a dog, sorry guys, if anyone's ever seen their dog eat their vomit, what happens? They're usually sick again, right? Like they throw it back up, and it's like this ongoing cycle of just like, ugh. So yeah, I think that it's like, and also I see it like another way, another light is like, you made this mistake, like you've thrown it up and now you're trying to like take it back and you can't, right? You can't undo it. So yeah, I think that's beautiful.
It's levels.
That's levels, like that's deep. Like I didn't think about that. I love that, I want to start using that. I also was gonna say earlier about this, like you just telling people flat out, I'm an alcoholic. I've never tried that, and maybe I should, because I think oftentimes when I just say like I don't drink, whether people articulate out loud or not, I think they want to know why. They want to know, mm-hmm. Oh, is it just because you are a healthy girl, or is it because you are an addict or an alcoholic? I think it might be nice to just open up with that, because then it's like you're already like, you're not ashamed, right? You're just stating facts. Like, this is what it is. Like, you don't need to play, you know, the game of like, oh, like, let me ask you 101 questions, except for the actual question that I want to know, or the answer I want to know. So I think that is interesting. And I would just be curious. I'm always like a sociologist. I just like to get people's like, I don't know, like their perspective. I would be curious to people's reactions to me saying that. So when you say people to, I'm assuming people who don't know you, the reason you're not drinking is because you are an alcoholic. What is that reception like? How do people respond to you making that bold claim, which shouldn't be that claim? We're out here, but you know, I'm curious. What do people respond and say?
I think it's quite like, you know, you said about the sociologist. I think that's why I do it, because I'm like, let me see how this other person reacts. So like, some people are like, oh my God, amazing. Like, how many years have you been sober? Like, this is so great. Da-da-da. Like, good for you. Some people, they just don't know what to say, because in their mind, they're like, oh wow, you've really got a problem. Like, oh my God. And then also some people don't know what to say, because our sobriety is shining a light on people who have issues with alcohol. And that's really uncomfortable. It's really uncomfortable to not be ready to acknowledge that. And so some people get very defensive, and they're not comfortable, or they're like, you're not really an alcoholic. You're not really. It's like, don't tell me how I am. You don't know me.
You're too pretty to be an alcoholic.
Right?
Didn't you know that? Yeah, it's not possible. Where's your brown paper bag? No, seriously. And unfortunately, I think those stigmas are what keep people sick. I have mixed emotions on this. I'm still processing. On one end, I claim it. I'm like, I'm an alcoholic. Fine. I recognize that. I'm not ashamed. I say that today. Some days I'm embarrassed. I'm not going to lie to you. It's a hard truth to swallow. And more recently, I was listening to the Cara Delevingne interview exclusive with Vogue. And she talks about how she doesn't tell people that she is, everyone knows, but she's like, I would rather use the term. I was going to say, she doesn't say she's in recovery. Instead, she prefers the term in healing, like she's healing, because it's an ongoing active process and it sounds more gentle. So like there's that element, but then I'm also like, is there another way to approach this labeling in a way that we destigmatize it by claiming it and just acknowledging it, like what you're doing? Like, I'm an alcoholic, .. waiting game, right? Like, I'm an alcoholic, look at me. I'm not by definition what you would assume an alcoholic would look like. But if I'm an alcoholic, to your earlier point, maybe that's shining a light on someone else's drinking patterns. Mm-hmm. And maybe it shows them that it's okay. That's sort of like the feedback I get. Like, people are like, I'm so glad to see someone like you.
Yeah.
Representation matters, right? See someone like you who I would never deem would have a drinking problem to that extent, be so forthcoming and honest about their sobriety and their struggles with addiction. So I don't know, like, I'm not really asking a question. I'm just posing these two, like, you know, do you think there's a problem with labeling people? Do you think that can be ostracizing to people who may not see themselves in that label? Or do you think that we should embrace and just acknowledge as a community that it's okay to be an alcoholic or an addict and claim it and hope to change the connotations associated with the word?
I think we should do all three. Like, it's not a one size fits all approach to healing. I really like that about the, I'm on a healing journey. Like, yes, if you want to call it that, call it what you want, as long as you're doing the work. My only fear when we start to use words that are kind of water down the seriousness of the issue is that people's approaches may be watered down to their own health and to their own sobriety. That's my only fear, and that's the only reason why, like, there's this thing, gray area drinking, right? Gray area, yes, drinking.
Yes. But tell us about gray. I know, but just in case someone doesn't, yeah, know what the term means, tell us more.
So that's like, you know, it's kind of wine mommy culture. Or it's, I am really, really healthy in the week, but at the weekends I get smashed. And I think a lot of people fall under gray area drinking, and they would never define themselves as alcoholics. But I define an alcoholic as someone who has a problem with alcohol. So if you are going out and getting smashed every single weekend, you have a problem with your relationship with alcohol.
But yes, what if alcohol has a problem with me?
Yeah, exactly.
What if I'm not the problem? It's alcohol.
It is the problem. So I just, and I'm like, yes, okay, that's fine for gray area drinking. If you say I'm a gray area drinker and I need help and I'm going to XYZ, okay, fine, do that. Get that help. But a lot of people who have more serious issues would love to put themselves in that category to avoid the responsibility of really healing themselves. And so, yeah.
Alcohol use disorder is a spectrum. And mm-hmm. if we run with this idea of it being a spectrum, that means at various points in your life, you could fall in different categories on that spectrum. I don't know where gray area drinking would fall. I guess somewhere in the middle of the spectrum. One end would be like, yeah, you're an alcoholic. The other end would be like, you don't drink, you're sober, I'm assuming. But I think the question that I tend to ask people who come to me, like, I'm never out here just like telling people about their relationship, yeah, with alcohol, but I'm always like, well, do you think you have a problem with alcohol? How do you use alcohol? Like, I think those two questions, like how you're using it and then what do you think? Because I, as far as I'm aware, there's no official diagnosis for being an alcoholic, right? There's no test that you can take per se, with the exception of like maybe having liver failure and all of the other things associated with that. But even then, it's like, you know, you self-diagnose yourself with, you know, maybe the help of a doctor. But honestly, it comes to honesty. I think that is what is integral and what saves people's lives. But the issue with alcohol, especially from my perspective, is it disarms you. Obviously, it weakens all of like the decision-making criteria that we have and lowers our inhibitions and things like that. But for me, it kept me so sick because I was able to lie to myself and like continue this perpetual cycle of like, anytime I had an inkling that, oh, damn, I think I have a problem. Now I feel uncomfortable. I'm going to drink. And it's like, I don't have a problem. I'm a gray area drinker. I would have defined myself easily as a gray area drinker at certain points of my life.
Yeah.
Where it was like, I was functional, I was, you know, excelling in my career, but I was a daily wine drinker. And mm-hmm. I think we see that, like, that wine is such a nice cushion for people. It's like, it's wine. It's not hard spirits. Like, it's still like a form of alcohol. And if you're drinking 1 to 2 bottles, or even like drinking to get inebriated, because my tolerance was so high that, like, you know, I needed a lot to get there. But I say all that to say, like, I think you answered perfectly. And I think it's just a matter of people being honest with themselves and recognizing if alcohol is negatively affecting them or their life, impeding their judgment, any of the things. You could go Monday through Friday and not have a sip of alcohol, but if you're getting sloshed, mm-hmm. wasted every single weekend. I wonder, like, by definition, like, I don't know if that categorizes you as having a problem, but I think that's problematic. And we can probably all say that when you said, if you sometimes are too blasé about, you know, the issue or even identifying what the issue could be, your approach to healing or your approach to recovery could also be watered down, and then you won't get the help that you actually need. Like, I couldn't just self-affirm my way out of my addiction. As much as I love mantras, as much as I love, you know, writing in my journal, that it wasn't going to cut it. Like, I needed a little bit more. And I think that's a great opening, because you need to get to, like, the root causes, which is, I think, what your therapist was helping you do. And so what things were helpful for you? So, like, if somebody were to today, and I know you're not a doctor, but if somebody were to today to come to you and say, like, Yaz, I'm inspired by your sobriety, I know you mentioned therapy. What specific things helped you get to this place of being okay, comfortable with maybe being uncomfortable? Because you mentioned alcohol was the harder thing for you to let go of.
Definitely community. Community, like, find. I found and I sought out so many different types of communities and things to do that did not involve alcohol. Like, I went to the gym, so I started getting into gym life where everyone's, like, focusing on their health. I went back to uni, I did my MA, like, where we're focusing on work, right? So we're meeting in coffee shops and we're doing all-nighters, but they're in the library, you know? Like, just finding other, like, I mean, I have an addictive personality, like, that's my issue. Like, I will just switch the addiction to other things. These are healthy things now, but I kind of tried to use it as my superpower. Right. Okay.
I'm pointing to myself. Me too. It's addiction replacement. I have an addictive personality through and through by definition. So I agree. Like, I think you just find the healthier route, but continue. So you, community was big, finding things that were healthier to fill that time.
Yeah. And then, like, obviously online platforms where you build that community of support, like, even just recently until now, like, finding you. I'm wearing an alcohol change t-shirt because I've just become an ambassador. Like, all of these things where you're around people that want the same thing as you, right? And then through that, you get to meet new people, learn about what they're about. And it just opens up so many doors, and actually your life becomes bigger. I think people feel like, when they leave alcohol behind, their socializing is done and their life becomes smaller. But really, how much socializing are you doing when you're in the bar? You can't remember half of it. You're repeating all your stories. You don't even know who's coming up to you. When you're sober, you're doing so much. You can fit, like, so much in, remember everything, develop deeper connections with people. And I think that really helps.
100%. You're just beginning to see, like, what real connection looks like. And did you have sober friends before? Because I didn't really know anyone sober that I wanted to hang out with. Like, I could think of one person. I had one roommate right when I moved to New York who was sober. Unfortunately, you know, they say representation matters. She was fun, actually. We used to go out and stuff, and she was fun. But she actually rubbed me the wrong way. She's one of the first people that told me she thought I had a problem with drinking. Mm-hmm. And I did not like how she approached it. It was like...
Right.
She came out from the kitchen with, like, several bags, like, of recycling, and the bottles were just, like, clinking.
Oh, she's okay. Like, wow.
Hey. She's like, hey, girl. I'm like, what? Like, what?
Right.
So I was just like, you don't get to tell me because you don't drink. So, like, anything I do, you're going to think is super out there. But she was right. Fast forward. It took me years to realize that she was right. So, Megan, if you're listening to this, you were right. But it's just funny because... Yeah, I think that was the hardest part, because I actually isolated myself, as many people do in the beginning, because, you know, you mentioned that you broke up with your boyfriend who around the same time you were getting clean, and that was good for you. So I realized that, like, I still have a lot of the same friends I had before, but I realized in that beginning where you're figuring out what this actually looks like and how to navigate the sober landscape, it's super important to maybe take a step back and redefine certain relationships. Those boundaries that you mentioned before definitely come into play here. That's actually my next question for you. So I know that you are a business owner and that you have a non-alcoholic bar, which I think is amazing, a pop-up bar. So I would love to hear more about that. What sparked that idea for you?
I had been looking so long since I first went sober for kind of acceptance in hospitality venues and like in bars and stuff. And, you know, in 2017, people were just not, bars just did not cater to non-drinkers. And then last year, I think it was Jan 22, I was at a spa for my birthday with my mum, and they had nothing. It was like a really fancy spa, but they had nothing for non-drinkers. I was like, what? And we were at dinner.
Sparkling water.
Right, that's it.
More sparkling water, like more. No, oh, I juice? Want something else. Juice, oh, apple juice?
Yeah. They brought over two mimosas or Bellinis or whatever. And so my mum, I've got a picture of her with both of them in her hands, like, woo! Like, she had a great time. But I was like, what? This is my birthday. And I know I'm not the only person that would have been feeling like that. Like, so I just decided, I came back home to my fiance and I was like, Jay, we're going to start a business. And he was like, okay. So I said, I'll do the cocktails. He is a carpenter. So I was like, you build the prototype of this first bar. We had our first, and that was January. So we did a little bit of work. We registered the company in March. We had our first like launch gig in April. And then we just haven't looked back.
Congratulations. That's amazing and so needed. And what's so crazy is like, I interviewed Ashley Johnson, the founder of Why Not. Yeah. She will become the first ever Black owned non-alcoholic wine and spirits company, which is come crazy. On! You know, snaps to you, Ash.
I come just on, Ashley. Believe, you're doing it.
I just cannot believe. And so are you, though. Like, you're doing it, too. And we are so needed in this space.
And now a quick word from our partners. It really feels like you're having a moment, pun intended, when you're sipping on the lovely and refreshing Moment. Now, what I love about Moment is that not only does it taste delicious, I have my favorite flavors. I love the blood orange. I love the spicy mango. But it's also good for you, which is exactly what I need in my life right now as I'm in my early 30s. It's infused with L-theanine, which is great for mental clarity. It also is packed with ashwagandha, which is great for helping to fight stress. It's made with all of these natural botanicals, which really enhances your vitality. It does not contain any added sugar. It's caffeine and, of course, alcohol-free. And you can purchase it in still or sparkling. I love a good sparkle moment, so that's typically the route I take. In the morning, it's great for a boost to start the day, versus in the afternoon, if you want to beat that afternoon slump and enhance your mental clarity, or if you just need like a simple pick-me-up. Like for me, I love to have a moment after the gym versus going into the gym because it just really helps re-energize me. And then in the evening, if you want to wind down after a long busy day and enjoy a delicious mocktail without the hangover, then Moment is great for that too. One of the best parts for me with Moment is I feel like it's a really conscientious brand. They donate 1% of all their sales to mental health nonprofits, so you can feel good about supporting greater causes as well. Head over to drinkmoment.com and use my code TSB23 to receive 12% off your very first order. Let's be Moment buddies. We can both have moments together.
Representation in business and entrepreneurship around Black sober women, because we are out here, and I don't know why we're not necessarily, I don't want to say we're not starting, because we are starting businesses, but we're not seeing them on par or on the same level with some of our contemporaries. And I'm just wondering, do you have any ideas as to why that could be? Because I know that you're in England, so it could look a little different. What's your thoughts in terms of how it is in England, and how has your experience been as a business owner in your space?
I don't want to be a downer, but I think, you know, globally, 0.04% of VC funding goes to Black women. We know this, We know this. So when you're talking about trying to start your own business as a Black woman, it is hard. Like, the funding support is not there. I'm not generalizing. That's a fact. For instance, we don't have disposable income. We don't have savings. Jamie, my partner, and I, we work really hard. I'm a mom to two stepkids. They're absolutely amazing.
Congratulations.
But we work really hard. So when we want to start our own business, the funding, to even get that funding, we're turned down for loans. We don't know, there's no investors. We don't have the network. And England is, no matter what people tell you, England is very much based on networks and hierarchy, right? It's who you know. Your net worth is your network. If you're not in those networks, you're going to have to work part-time, like really, really hard to even get near those networks. And that's the step one.
Yes.
Then you have to get in with those networks and somehow convince them to take an interest. But if I'm XYZ Joe Blogs, I'm already in those networks, I just turn to whoever and say, give me 20K. I also turn to my dad and say, give me another 20K. Boom, that's my business started, right?
No, but I'm self-started. And I'm self-made. What are you talking about?
Don't even, please.
My
that's
dad
biggest...
just gave me like 50K. Are you kidding me?
Do you know, Nadine, I spent the past year interviewing a lot of people who are independents, and they're amazing. They're amazing people. There's no shade to them. I love their businesses. But I interviewed them and I asked them, I said, how did you get started? I want to know. And they'll always think, yeah, I did it on my own. I did it. And I'm like, yeah, okay. But who gave you, like, where did you get the initial thing? Did you save or whatever? I was really lucky because actually my mom, actually my dad. Okay.
And that's, you know, it. What it is when they go, that's how you know. They're like, well, since you want to get into the specifics, I just had, it's the I just, no, it's like, how did you get started? Like, where that's did that it. Disposable income come from? Like,
and this is no shade and it's no shame, yeah? If people have the resources to be able to start their businesses, I'm happy for them and I'm grateful. I don't want them to feel ashamed. I don't want them to feel like they don't deserve it. This isn't about that, but it's about the deep inequality that sits in all of our communities towards women of color, specifically Black women, when we try and elevate ourselves. We're never given any help at all, even though we are coming from, I don't want to say the most disadvantaged, but we're coming with some disadvantages.
Absolutely, preach. No,
right?
Continue.
And who helps us? No one. We help ourselves. Like, that's it. We're bootstrapping this business, Jamie and I. I work another job. He works for himself. Every single cent that, well, pound that we make goes into the business. I don't have a sales and marketing team. You know, I don't have, we subcontract out the work to bartenders, freelance bartenders, when we're having a big event, because we can't afford to keep like PAYE scheme running. Like, this is the reality of bootstrapping your own business. And I wish that someone had told me that earlier. And I just want to say to, I know this is turning into like some business podcast now, but I just want to say to people, Black women who are thinking about becoming, you know, opening their businesses, get some savings. Like, if you can get some savings, if you can get a loan, get a loan, like, you know, or start your investor journey, as in getting into the right places with the right people. Start that now. Just start that before you're even releasing to market, because we have to fight 10 times harder. That's one of my first mentors who said that to me in publishing, one of the only Black women in publishing. You have, wow, to work 10 times harder. You have to work fight 10 times harder to even be respected. She didn't lie.
I was about to say that's truth. And you are looking at the team. Like, yeah, like, I think that's what people fail to realize. Like, we are doing all the things at the same time on top of our other duties that requires income so that I can pour it back into the business and the podcast and this and that. So you had said, had you known this before, would that have changed anything? Would that have changed your decision to start your business? Had you known how difficult funding would be, or how much work it would be required, and how much personal investments you would have to pour into your business, would you change anything?
I think I would have been more strategic. Like, I'm just a doer. I'm like, let's do it. Let's get it done. We'll learn on the way. So maybe I would have been more strategic, but would I have just like ditched the idea? No, because for me, like, it's the culmination of all of my passions, and being able to actually be free, be creative, serve the people who we want to serve.
Amen. That's what I was thinking. I was like, this is such a needed, not even good cause. It's needed. But yeah, continue. I'm sorry.
No, that's it. Like, that's the best feeling. Like, okay, yeah, maybe we're broke right now, but you know, things change.
Every business, I shouldn't say every business in there, but every good story starts with it's a come up, right? It's like I started from here and now I'm here and then I'm gonna go there. Like it's there's levels and you're on your way. I really appreciate everything you've shared, Yaz. And I just would like to, I like to ask all of my guests this. What's the number one thing that you're doing and that you consistently do to protect your sobriety?
Boundaries, boundaries, boundaries. I just cannot say again. Like, I know it's so hard, and maybe if you've not been through the therapeutic journey yet, like, it's a bit of an abstract term, but it really means just listening to your own heart. And if you are not comfortable with something, you're not comfortable with the way someone's treating you, you're not comfortable with the space or situation you're in, giving yourself permission to remove yourself from it. Like, that is the way that we protect our peace. And ever since I started implementing boundaries, like, I have felt so much stronger in myself.
So I love that you said boundaries, and I feel like that was specific to me. I needed to hear that message because I'm still working on that, but I love that you're using boundaries to protect your sobriety.
Can
So
I ask
I,
you
oh my gosh, nobody ever wants to do it. Yes, ask away, ask away.
What are you using? Because I always think, oh, maybe I'm, you know, maybe the scene has moved on since I first got sober. But as are there any like new tools that you're using, like, that are really helping you? And like, has I've noticed there's been like a massive digital trend in our community where we're just suddenly popping up like sober Black women, and we're really supporting each other and really going hard. And I wondered if like you've noticed that too, and you being part of it, like, are you seeing the trend?
I'm seeing, okay, so I would say because when you mentioned that when you got sober 7 years ago, there wasn't really any options out there in the market in terms of like having even non-alcoholic options on the menu. Like, I even a year and a half ago or 2021 when I got sober, I also felt that like there were limited less options than there are now. But I don't know if it's almost like, you know when they say like law of attraction, like I don't know if you believe in that kind of thing, but
I
I don't know if it's
do.
just because, oh, okay, good, because I definitely do. I don't know if it's just like me, like my mindset is different, but I feel like I'm attracting people and even things like non-alcoholic options. They just come to me. Like I feel like I'm
Yeah.
literally like in conversation with people, random people that you would never suspect because you can't really look at people necessarily and determine their sobriety status. But because I'm so much more comfortable going into year two of my sobriety, I'm having those conversations. Now, like I said, I'm really serious about that sociological experiment that you've inspired. I'm gonna start telling people, like, I don't drink, I'm an alcoholic, just to see how that feels. But I don't say the alcoholic piece. I just, you know, I'm very open about, like, I am sober. If I could wear a name tag that says, hi, my name is Christine and I'm sober, I really would, because I have so many eye-opening moments. Like, it's serendipity. It's almost like God is talking to me through people, and I'm sure I'm talking to people through God. Like, they feel the same way about me. But like, I think everyone, I do really believe this, has been affected by addiction in some form, right?
Agreed.
Whether it's directly or someone they love or care about. So there
Right.
is this like invisible thread that is linking all of us together. And so for me, that is therapy in and of itself. Just anytime I can have a conversation that, you know, scratches beyond the surface, and it's like we get into something like the nitty-gritty, like something that's really like speaks to my soul. And so then there's that part. So like just having conversations with people, that's a big part of why I have the podcast. And then for me, like going even back to if people listen to episode one of this podcast, my call to action was I want to talk to women, of course, but I want to talk to Black women. Because when I started my Sober Butterfly, like the Instagram page, it was part testimonial, part, like when I say testimonial, it was just a way for me to hold myself accountable. And a part of that was ego, because it was really very early in my sobriety. And I was just like, I'm going to prove to myself, like, you know, that I can stay sober. And, you know, like also do it in a public way so that I can hold myself accountable. So there was that part. But then, ironically, what ends up happening is people are really reaching out to me. They're sliding in the DMs to genuinely like show love and support and ask real questions about like how my sober journey is going. And a big part of that was women, Black women, who were like, sis, thank you. Thank you for doing something that I'm afraid to do. Like, basically, like, you know, or giving me, seeing you is giving me inspiration to say that, like, right. I can do this journey too. Because I don't care what anyone says. We want to see ourselves in any capacity. Mm-hmm. We want to see mm-hmm. ourselves in healing, if you want to use Cara Delevingne's word, in recovery, in sobriety, in addiction. It's just, it is yeah. what it is. Like, I feel more connected to you and other pages and other influencers and other people who are open about their sobriety. Yes, yeah. women, that's important. But when I see a Black woman doing it, I'm like, okay, like, let's talk. And yeah. I'm constantly like inspired and energized for those conversations. And I still don't see, I do agree, like, there is more visibility, but I'm gonna push people to be even more, because, and that's the one thing I will say, like, I will say I'm an alcoholic. I'm fine with that term now. But yeah. that's one thing, not to lead this conversation astray, but that's one thing I don't like about the anonymity factor when it comes to some of the programs. Like, I get that people deserve to have that privacy, and I'm not going to fault people for wanting to be private about it. But I think that lends its hand to secrecy, and secrecy yeah. for me is connected to shame, and shame Agreed. To me is connected to my addiction. So Agreed. For me, I got to like talk about it. That's why like I'm more so like, that's the one issue I have with people who are just like, we stay in this dark little room and we don't talk about it. Like, in public, you don't know me. Like, literally, in public, you don't know me. And I'm like, you were just bearing your soul to me, but okay. All right. So that's like the one thing I struggle with. But like, to answer your question in a very like disjointed way, I guess talking about it, like, for me is yeah. the biggest thing that's keeping me sober. And feeling like I have, like, I'm of service to people, even through this podcast, even through my page, like, things that are like self-serving, like, it's a little selfish, but it's, I know it's also serving, and it's giving to yes. a greater community as well.
Oh my God. Thank you for sharing.
Like, thank you for asking me. Nobody ever asks me questions.
I really wanted to know, because like what you said about service, like, honestly, it's so rewarding. And I don't know whether that is like something about getting sober or going through to a place where you have more clarity, but like, serving other people is just the best. Like, okay, I'm benefiting because I feel good serving people, but like, is that wrong? Because serving people is just amazing, and that is not encouraged in any other aspect of our societies. Amen. Yeah, outside of like charity work, church work, but in our daily lives, in our practice, just because we're never encouraged to serve others. And it's so good for everyone.
It is for everyone. And it makes me feel good. Like, I believe altruism is self-serving in so many ways, because I feel so good. I'm like, yeah, this is like for you, but it's really for me. Like, yeah. I'm helping you, but like, you're also really helping me by like me just being here and helping you. It's weird, but I totally agree with you. Like, that service piece is critical. I'm in my selfish era. Like, I don't have kids. I don't have a man. I'm like, it's me. I'm the only child.
Yes. Okay. Me. Only child.
But at the same time, I'm like, especially when I was drinking and partying and doing everything under the sun, like, I don't see things necessarily black and white, but I wasn't as good of a person as I am today. And I was very much like focused on my next high, like my next chemically, like, chemical state of change. Like, I want to feel different. Like, that's what matters to me. And I couldn't show up for people the way that they deserved in the same way that I can now.
Yeah, me too. Like, just preach. Like, it's so weird. I feel like everything you're saying, I'm like, yeah, me too.
Exactly. When you were sharing everything, and that's the power of like talking about it, right? Like, you would never be able to necessarily know this about people unless you open your mouth and you share some, and it's vulnerability, and it's being uncomfortable, and yeah, it's really putting yourself out there. And that's the power of group and community. That's what you were saying too. Yeah. But yeah, all of the things like boundaries, once again, still working on that. But I'm getting better, and I won't do anything that's going to compromise mm-hmm. my sobriety. It's not always easy to talk about your story. So I really appreciate you taking us through what that was like for you and how you got healthier, or how you're healing and continually growing from your experiences. So I really appreciate everything that you shared, Yaz. Is there anything you want to say or share before we wrap, like anything you want to promote or tell the people about? Because this is a great time to do that.
Well, I just want to say thank you so much for having me on and for this conversation today, tonight, where I am. I don't have anything that I can say out loud to promote, but if you follow my Instagram, align_events_, then you'll see that we're doing a little spring, fun spring thing this Sunday.
I know what it is. I know what it is. Yeah, and it's big. You guys need to follow her on Instagram to find out. It's big. She's being so coy right now with it. But it's like, I was like, oh!
So yeah, so follow and find out. That's it. And thank you. Like, just thank you. It's really important to have these
thank you. Thank you, Yaz. I so appreciate you. And everyone go follow Yaz at align_events_. Thank you for coming on. And thank you for sharing your positive message of sobriety and hope.